Please pull up a seat and wind down. Was your sojourn on Rockanjima a pleasant one? The Witch of Theatre-Going has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend. Hello!
And welcome
to a hidden tea party. My name is Courtney, and I am the Witch of Video Games. And these are my detectives.
Ooh. Detective?
Ooh.
Yeah.
We've been promoted. Yeah,
I need you to figure out who killed the Golden Witch.
Okay.
After all, it is her funeral.
It is her funeral.
It is. Yes,
do you want to introduce yourself? You know what I'm
Hi, I'm Jess. My pronouns are they, them, but I'm a detective. there's a story behind that, by the way, which is, this is a thing that I say now, because one time I was playing a video game, a detective game, in my room while I was on Discord to one of my friends in a different room of my house. And she put her headset down to talk to somebody else. And I didn't realize this. I was just playing my little game. And she, from the other end of the room, while having a different conversation, heard me go, "I'm a detective."
<That's> so good.
Through the headset.
That's amazing. I'm a detective.
I was, to be fair.
Amazing. Hi, my name's Rowan. My pronouns are they, them, and I hate women.
Oh, confirmed.
This is new.
Confirmed. I fucking hate women.
The minute we've got to call this episode "Rowan Hates Women."
confirmed.
Quite possibly. So
we've got to have it ready for your call out post.
I started reading this episode and, like, spoilers to anyone who hasn't read it, like, whatever. This episode, like, we've got some, it's male character introduced. I was immediately like, Stan, immediate Stan, immediately like, fuck yeah. And I realized, like, this character is just, we've had almost exactly this character before as a woman. And in fairness, I did stan her too, but nowhere near as hard.
Yeah, you did.
I think if, I guarantee if Umineko was an all-male cast, I'd feel better about it. It was just like, you know when you see somebody on, like, Tumblr who's seen, like, very female-heavy media, and they find the two dudes, whether or not they interact, and just ship them? That's me with him.
Wow.
I'm going insane.
I love that. So what you're saying is, if we just gender flipped all the witches, you'd be so down for this VN. If it was just Battler hanging out with a bunch of hot men, you'd be really into it.
Well, there's a lot more potential for homoerotic energy between, like, Battler and the witches, then, at least. I guess that's going.
Because he can't say slice off your cow tits and make me a sandwich.
Right, he can't say that stuff. Also,
he can if they have big enough titties.
That's true.
Could you imagine the power of saying that to a man?
I don't know. We're a trans inclusive podcast. Dudes can have tits.
Listen, I guess, but I dare anyone listening to this podcast to go to their to a close male friend in their life, walk up to them and say, "Hey, slice off those cow tits. And make me a sandwich."
I think you'd get hit if you did that to anyone, honestly.
I think you should be. I think that's crime punishable by death.
But yeah, and also I hope if you do have any trans male friends, you're not going around to them saying, "Hey, what's up, Cowtick?"
Yeah, go on.
I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum.
That's... Anyway, let's get on to our
my final point I'm gonna make is I do feel like the insane outfits Aria Kishi gives to dudes at least don't have fanny frills.
Oh, but imagine how much better they'd be if they did.
Yeah, now I'm imagining Ronave with fanny frills.
Ooh, he'd rock bad, them. Actually. You know he would.
Ronave's the only person in the world who can serve fanny frills. Everyone else banned.
We started a new episode this week.
We sure did.
Episode 7.
Woo!
Good morning. Today, the funeral of the Golden Witch and her game have been scheduled. The game has come to a close, and only fond memories remain. Here, the cold, hard truth will be revealed, as death finally approaches. This episode is a little difficult.
I want to know whether this episode is going to be difficult emotionally because it's a funeral.
Ooh.
Or mentally because it's Umen Echo. Or emotionally again because it's Grimm.
my dad, when he goes, like, when something is difficult, he's like, oh, emotionally, physically, mentally. And then he'll often say financially. Ecumenically.
Ooh.
So the real question is this going to be a financially difficult episode for me, Courtney?
Oh god, if they start talking about the price of yen, the yen value of gold again, that would be financially difficult.
It's a numerically difficult episode.
Halfway through, Rika, she's just going to throw up a PayPal link and is like, if you want to see the rest, throw me a couple bucks. I will say, I think this is the first episode of the answer arc that has claimed to have some form of difficulty.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I think episode 5 was easy, and then episode 6 was like, we don't have a difficulty actually.
Well, it's supposed to be giving us the answers, which shouldn't be that difficult, really.
You'd think.
Maybe it's difficult. It's a little bit difficult for the game to actually fucking answer any of the questions. It's really struggling with that. And let's be honest, it really is.
Maybe it'll give us the answers, but it thinks it will be difficult for us to think about them.
It really wants us to think about them.
Oh, it sure does. It really wants you
sure
to think.
Does.
We read from the prologue to the end of chapter 2, Rose's confession. And boy, did she sure confess some stuff that I will say after the spoiler warning, if you haven't read, we'll be doing spoilers, etc., etc. She sure confessed to some stuff we already knew.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, she totally did.
She was just there like, yep, remember that shit I said in episode 3?
It's back.
I'm saying it again.
Oh boy.
Woo! In less detail this time.
We start off this reading and I fucking tripped over the cheese line that Umen Echo set up for me and landed face first. I absolutely fell for every single bait that Umen Echo set up in the prologue. So the prologue starts off with an unnamed, unseen person interrogating a maid about a bunch of murders. Immediately, I was like, oh my god, really? Are we going this hard? Like, fucking Featherine said, drag out the guts. I didn't realize we were going for instant evisceration. Shannon theory confirmed. Everything's confirmed. And over the course of this introduction, it was revealed not the same maid.
By the way, I would love to say that when you said that you tripped over the cheese line, I was imagining, you know, from the cheese puzzle, the Erica's cheese puzzle with the enormous bit of like magic cheese that stretches forever. I was like, why was there cheese in the anyway?
Oh my god! So, could you imagine if this is just a sequel to Erica's cheese puzzle? It's the whole episode. It's just like, what if we did a mystery based on the cheese puzzle?
You save someone. The only interaction in the whole game is the end of the game where you have to solve a cheese puzzle to save the continuity of the timeline.
timeline actually split into multiple pieces.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go back to Rowan, you know, being tempted by whatever Rika she's doing.
So I'm gonna cover a little bit this out of order for ease of understanding's sake. So the ways that this is, it's foreshadowed that this isn't the same maid, is one of the characters say, did the clock in the reception hall chime at midnight at exactly the right time? I was like, what? What? I fucking said that last time. And then, did the dog by the back door bark at everyone? And I was like, oh, nice Sherlock Holmes reference. Completely did not realize that this was like it giving away that it wasn't the same maid. It took me until later when they were talking about like the maids, like a bunch of other particulars of this mystery, for me to realize that they were talking to someone involved in a completely separate mystery.
Interesting. So yeah, I at no point thought this was anything to do with anything of the characters we knew, just because I was like, well, if it was Shannon, they'd say it was Shannon. So I was just like, who's this maid then?
It's fucking Mrs. White from
Cluedo.
I hope so. She was my favorite. She always slayed.
Complete tangent. Have you seen the new Cluedo designs?
Oh my god. Speaking of Mrs. White serving.
Absolutely. Hello,
Chef White. You wanna come on the pod?
Chef White, come on the pod. Honestly, there's not a single person on the Cluedo redesigns that I'm not like, hi. Yeah.
I love Cluedo, by the way.
Yes,
I have been playing Higurashi, and Cluedo does feature in Higurashi. So good for Ryukishi. Represent. Some good deduction games.
So other things that it sets up, the prologue sets up, that I absolutely just fell head over heels for, is in the mystery genre, the motive or the why done it is given the least precedent. I was like, no, it fucking isn't. And then over the course of the prologue, somebody else comes in and is like, no, no.
The upshot of it is basic, because it's the maids being interrogated by inquisitors of the Great Court of Heaven or whatever, isn't it? And they're like, we don't need to know why you did it. You just need to have the opportunity. And that's all we care about. We'll find out why when we torture you later.
Yeah. It's very like witch trials coded in that sense. And I'm like, okay. A character turns up who I think is named pretty much straight away. His name's Will. Mm-hmm. He's the quote-unquote right, which is
with a
special
W.
level of detective. That's like the top.
I like
every mystery needs a heart. If you forget the heart, then you're not even solving the mystery at all.
I want to talk about his character design, because he's wearing this quite fun little coat thing. I quite enjoy it. He's wearing one of the deepest V-necks I've ever seen. It's incredibly fruity, and like this little necklace as well with it. He has this what color is his hair? It's kind of like brownish.
Yeah.
Browny red, but then there's this tiny little bright red streak in it, and it looks terrible, and I love it. Really. I'm like, that's rubbish.
Yeah, that is from Ryukishi's original design, by the way, just so you know. That's not a new addition, that is there.
His tiny red streak.
Things to note about the original design: one, the red streak is more contrast with the hair.
Yeah, it you looks can barely see it
still. Yeah, you can really barely see it on the redesigns, but like on the original ones, it is more visible. It still looks disgusting in clashes, but it is more visible. And secondly, he absolutely looks like he's wearing eyeliner on the original, which is not something they've
Ebony kept. Darkness, Dementia, Ravenway, who?
He's like fully got like a wing going.
Oh, okay.
It's not even like fucking coward guyliner, like he's
it's
gone
full.
In.
PS3 is weak for not adding that.
It really is.
And I would like to say that his name is a reference to the real name of the mystery writer S.S. Van Dyne, whose real name was Willard Huntington Wright. Ah. So Will goes by, his real name is Willard H. Wright.
Willard really got me. I know there's something extremely funny about the name Willard.
Willard, insane.
But that's why he's called that. It is a reference to the real name of SS Van Dyne.
We will be talking about
Van Dyne quite a bit this episode. Anyway, continue, Rowan, on your cheese tripping adventure.
No, what I was going to say is I saw the name Wright and I was like, you're really going that far in with the fucking Phoenix Wright reference? like you're going to be that brazen about it? Okay.
Did Phoenix Wright come out before Room and Echo, Courtney?
It did, but he's not called Phoenix Wright in Japan.
Right. So what's he called in Japan?
He's called Ryuichi Naruhodo.
Okay.
The surname Naruhodo is a pun because it means, like, I've got it.
That's great.
Later on, Will claims he's retired and he's like, oh, you should go and speak to the new Wright. And I was like, are you fucking joking? Is the
Mr.
new
Phoenix.
Phoenix? Is it fucking Phoenix Wright?
Can you imagine they're in the same universe?
I mean, maybe this is a reference. Again, I assumed it wasn't because he has a different name in Japan, but like, maybe.
I mean,
I don't know.
My little idiot brain saw two dots and connected them. Do with what you will.
My little idiot. I love how our idiot brains are working separately and differently in this, because you're like, I'm seeing all of these connections, I'm falling for them, and I'm like, I don't see any connections. I didn't think about the Shannon connection, didn't think about this one either. I was just like, do 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 do.
Incredible. And meanwhile, I was just imagining Ryukishi like setting them up, and I was fully just knocking them down. Everything. I was just like, yep, okay. So after stumbling through this hell of a prologue, where Will sort of jumps in, saves this maid, is like, no, every mystery needs a heart. I was like, okay, I guess that's how this episode's going. I was just like, yep.
It sure is. So... spliced between what Rowan just summarized, we have a scene of Battler and Vigilia laying Beatrice to rest.
In like a purple chapel.
Yes.
Purple meta world kind of chapel.
Yeah.
And Battler puts a book in her open casket and says it's a story between him and Beatrice, a tale that will be forever shut within the cat box.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of this, because I was like, is this... this could be a record of all of Beatrice's game boards so far. This could be Battler having written a Hashijo-style story to her to prove that he's got her truth. This could be him having written, basically, because there was... they've talked about the essence of Beatrice's truth and essence and stuff before, and I was like, has he written that down? That we still don't know. What's in the book? I want to see it. Incidentally, as well, the CG, the splash art for the book is the same one that is used for Maria's grimoire in the Anja flashbacks.
Yeah,
I don't know whether that's relevant or whether they were just like, we have a fancy looking book art already, we'll just use that.
Yeah, it's always hard to tell with the PlayStation sprites. It's like they
what's reusing things for economy and what's a clue.
because Ryukishi didn't do splash art like that.
No.
so stuff like that is like, yeah, okay, the demon guns are the same both times around, but, like, is that just budget?
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about Van Dyne's rules now?
I do.
Fuck us up, Jess, go.
Okay, let's go, Jess.
Because
come on,
the way that Will brings this up is that he's arguing basically the maid is there and the inquisitors are basically like, well, it has to be her. She's the only one who had a fake alibi. And he's like, well, you didn't try very hard to prove that other people's alibis are fake, were you? And then says in red, it is forbidden for a servant to be the culprit. Van Dyne's rules number 11. And then, so yeah, I looked up all of Van Dyne's rules and they're basically, there's 20 of them, which is too many for a start. They cover most of Knox's as well, to be fair, but there's some extras thrown in. Like number one is the reader must be able to solve the mystery. Like all clues must be presented. We've done that one before. Mm-hmm. Number two, don't play tricks on your reader. Other than like the criminal can play tricks on the detective and the reader can be, you know, tricked by those as well. But you mustn't like obscure things more for your reader, which is basically the same as the first one. Three, there must be no love interest. I love this one.
Uh-oh, Battle of Beato shippers. Yeah. We're in trouble.
I was like, yeah. Umineko simultaneously broke this one and then massively rubbed it in. It was like, we're doing a love game in our mystery. Fuck you.
Yeah, so is this a love interest for the detective?
It just says, the business in hand is to bring a criminal to the bar of justice, not to bring a lovelorn couple to the hymeneal altar.
I guess think it's
this
like
implies that it's a detective.
Okay,
you know?
I guess it's like oh, it's this shouldn't a... be a romance novel. It's a murder mystery novel. Romance is absolutely secondary.
Secondary, which is interesting because obviously, like, I think love is central to Umineko and its themes. I think
without love, it cannot be seen.
Yeah. Number four is the detective or one of the official investigators should never turn out to be the culprit. We've had that one on Knox before.
Oh, by the way, Rowan, I just want you to know I had thought of the very cursed phrase, without pod, it cannot be cursed.
Without pod, it cannot be cursed.
Okay.
thank you for that one.
I fucking love a pod. Like a little
love a good pod,
some peas or something. Oh, so good.
Sorry, Jess. Continue. Incredible. I just had to get that out of the system.
Number five is the culprit must be determined by logical deduction rather than accident or coincidence. The detective novel must have a detective in it. Which I think, debatably, Umineko breaks this one as well, because is Battler really a detective in the first few episodes? Like, he's I guess, in the role of detective, but, like, he's resisting it. He doesn't really want to be a detective.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. You've just made me think, because, so, are these rules for murder mysteries or detective novels? Because I would argue that they're separate things. Murder mystery doesn't necessarily like detective is a subsection of murder
mystery.
Yeah,
murder mystery novels I don't think would necessarily have to have a detective.
Which is interesting because if you look at stuff like Agatha Christie was really, really adamant that Poirot wouldn't have any love interests. She like one of her conditions that they continued making the Poirot TV show is that he didn't turn into a pinup. He was like, she was like, he absolutely cannot have a love interest. There's got to be no romance plots. And that was done because, like, that was how one of the big ways she wanted to express her creative control over that. So I think it's really interesting to consider, like, I don't know, are these for a detective novel? In which case, like, the love interest rule, I don't think should be universal, but it is an interesting trope and a pattern, nonetheless. I don't know.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because, like, obviously, one of the bit in the blurb of this rule is, you know, the detective doesn't have to be, you know, like, doesn't have to be like a cop or anything, but they have to be someone who is gathering clues. and reaching conclusions through analysis of those clues. And I think it is debatable whether Dattler actually does that in, say, episode one.
I completely agree with you. I think there's an interesting point there about what we're doing. Does Umineko flout these rules on purpose?
And yeah, does Umineko flout these rules? And if the game balls are flouting the rules, but they can be, but these rules can be said in red, what does that mean?
So I would like to say Ryukishi very carefully chose the rules that he put in this game. There is a reason he did not put all of them in this game.
So not all of Van Dyne's are involved.
Yes, only the ones that Will mentions, because Ryukishi is not a huge Van Dyne fan.
Interesting.
But thought it would be fun to reference it anyway.
I'll continue. I have some things to say about that after.
No, go ahead. I'm curious as to what they are anyway.
Number 7, there must be a corpse. It basically says that no less a crime than murder will suffice. 300 pages is far too much bother for a crime other than murder. He's like, don't fucking waste my time unless you've killed someone. Which I don't necessarily agree with, but it's funny.
It is very funny.
It's like, don't at me unless someone's dead, okay?
Dudes fucking rock. That's so funny. That's the kind of shit, that's the kind of arbitrary line I would draw. That's the, you know when we've got a slow episode and I'm trying to find something to hate on and I really can't figure it out? That's the kind of shit I make up, like, but there's no corpse.
Yeah. Then there's number 8, is the problem of the crime must be solved by strictly naturalistic means. No mind reading, spiritual stuff, blah, blah, blah.
He's not racist about it.
Yeah, I guess. This one, I think these ones might have been written slightly later. Can't remember.
Interesting.
There must only be one detective. Because apparently having multiple people working on the problem together is unfair because there's only one reader. I don't agree with that at all. I think it's interesting you have multiple people, especially if they don't agree with each other. Hey-ho. The culprit must turn out to be a person who's played a more or less prominent part in the story. We've done that one before.
Fair enough.
Number 11, a servant must not be chosen by the author as the culprit. It's too easy. Is basically, he's like, they're too sus. That's too easy. That's boring. And the fact that that Numeneko has chosen to say that one in red is interesting. Because obviously Canon and Shannon are servants. Do they stop being servants if they are Beatrice? Say. I don't know what to do with that. And also, do Van Dyne's rules, they're red in this situation, are they red for Beatrice's game boards? Are red truths always objectively true in all situations? Or, like...
Because he said it in relation to the prologue game
murder.
Board.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but this
which
is...
I assume is something else.
It is a separate game board, yes.
So I don't know whether...
I mean, so... neither of Nox's nor Van Dyne's rules are specifically applicable to any given game board unless the game master says that they are.
Right,
the
okay.
reason Delanor was able to use Nox's commandments in episode 5 was because Lambda Delta said that was...
That they were using them.
Basically.
Right.
That they were conforming to Nox's commandments.
So I will be interested to see if Will, in the rest of this, as a Van Dyne stan... is going to have problems because the rules are not quite the same. There's another one here which I think Umineko, or at least I think the game board of episode 3 probably flouts, which is there must only be one culprit no matter how many murders are committed. You're allowed helpers and you're allowed helpers, but the entire plan must be on one person. And I'm like, we all kind of agree that Ava does a lot of the murdering in episode 3, but not the first
all
bit.
All of it.
Yeah. And it doesn't really make any sense if she does the first 6. I suspect that doesn't apply to the Umineko game board. Number 13 is don't have secret societies or the mafia.
This seems like a fairly sensible rule. Again, I'm like, I can think of lots of instances where one might break that and it be interesting, but as a general, like, oh, the mafia did the murder, that doesn't seem like an interesting detective story, as it were.
Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, again, wouldn't put it as a hard and fast rule for always. The method of murder and detecting must be rational and scientific. You're not allowed mysterious devices. We've done that one before in Nox as well. The truth of the problem must be apparent at all times, provided the reader is shrewd enough to see it. Basically, foreshadowing has to have happened. I think that means. And so if you reread it knowing the answer, you should be able to see the clues. This one, I
which
find...
Which you can do with Umineko.
Yeah, because you're doing it. And you can't say any of it, which is great fun for you, I'm sure.
I've had so many moments where I'm like, this is so excellently foreshadowed, but I can't say it on the pod.
Yeah. You'll have to tell us about them later.
I have a few I've written down for when we're fully
brief. Rowan, you'll fucking love this one, right?
Oh, boy.
A detective novel should contain no long descriptive passages, no literary dallying with side issues, no subtly worked out character analyses, no atmospheric preoccupations. Such matters have no vital place in a record of crime and deduction.
Rikishi just fucking found dead in Japan.
Yeah, murdered by this.
So funny to me, because on one hand, God, I wish Ryukishi had listened to this fucking rule. God, I wish I had not had to sit through the George Shannon date. Are you kidding? On the other hand, this is the most bullshit I've ever heard.
Yeah,
as
it's
like someone who did an English lit degree, I'm like, this fucking sucks. On the other hand, please follow it.
Yeah, I'm like, there's a beautiful middle ground between this rule and what Ryukishi did, and.
Yeah.
That could have been
a question. In your top five worst Umineko moments, is the George Shannon date on there?
Of course it is. Easily.
Okay, yeah, good. Just checking. I think nothing's like dethroned it.
I don't know what the five would be in order. I think it's like the George Shannon date, you know what the other one would be. And then there's three moments throughout the course of Umineko where I've just sort of like thrown my head into my hands or walked physically away from the novel that I probably can't put my finger on now. But that's the other three moments where
I can put my finger on one of them. It's that Lambda and Burncastle hidden tea party where they're recovered in sweets. And
God, yeah.
I remember that one for you.
Jeez. Yeah. There's just a few moments where I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And walked away.
Oh, just like, Erica first saying the term intellectual rapist was probably another one.
Yeah. God. We're doing
Which by the way is mentioned in this reading.
It is. Yeah.
It is mentioned in this reading. We're doing lists of reasons why Rowan really does not want to do next week's reading. You're like reminding me of why I don't want to keep going. Oh my god.
All of these things are in the past, Rowan. Okay. I'm sure nothing bad will ever happen again. I can't promise that. Really can't.
I can promise that next week's reading is fucking wild. Okay. Like, probably one of the wildest readings we're gonna do on the pod. Mm-hmm. I'm not even joking.
Wow.
It's gonna be very different and it's gonna be very crazy.
I love how Ryukishi was like, I'm going to flout this one so hard, no one will like how hard I flouted it.
Even Courtney uses the control button sometimes.
A detective, Ryukishi has written this rule to say a detective novel should contain at least 10 minutes talking about the yen value of gold.
I think you gotta most know. That is the one thing I stand by Umineko for. You know, most detective novels should have more financial analysis than this.
Dislike. I don't like that.
I said before we started recording, dear listener, that I needed fresh takes because Umineko sucks was becoming a stale take. This week's take, Rowan sucks.
okay, that's new.
That is new. I don't think I agree with it, but that's new.
I hate women and I think financial analysis is good.
You're writing your own call out post.
I don't think you could say either of those things in Red Truth. Let's just say that.
I can't say either of these things. I fucking love women and I hate capitalism. Some of my best friends are women, I swear.
Some of my worst enemies are capitalism.
Do we have any more
yes we do. There's four more.
20 commandments.
Yeah, there's too many. Van Dyne, there were too many here. At least three of them are like the same. Number 17.
Van Dyne, maybe some editing.
The Umineko of detective novel principles.
Exactly.
Except one of them is
don't write too much, and then guess what he did. 17 is confusing to me. It says a professional criminal must never be shouldered with the guilt of a crime in a detective story. Crimes by housebreakers and bandits are the province of the police departments, not of authors and brilliant amateur detectives. A really fascinating crime is one committed by a pillar of a church or a spinster noted for her charities. What does this mean? Does this mean that a criminal isn't allowed to feel bad about it and they have to be justified about doing it?
It means the culprit shouldn't be like a professional.
Right.
Yeah, it's like the culprit shouldn't be somebody obvious.
Right, I see what you mean.
Like a goody two shoes.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like
from grace.
Yeah. Oh yeah, okay. I misread that. Yeah.
Umineko does follow this though, let's be honest. Shannon's like the purest little bean
that we know of. Maybe she was an assassin when she was three before she joined the Ushura Mias.
It would have to be when she was three if we were gonna go for before she joined the Ushura Mias.
Trained assassin who's just been sleeper cell waiting for like 13 years to complete her mission of assassinating the Ushura Mias.
And she's been keeping up her training with Genji, who is obviously like some kind of strange robot assassin.
Going up to Shannon and like with my red book with a black star on it and reading out like freight car 11 22 book box, just fully activating the Winter Soldier.
And then
Rowan makes Marvel references. Keep going.
I'm going to speed run the next ones. A crime must never turn out to be an accident or a suicide. Cool.
Sure.
The motives for all crimes should be personal rather than international assassination war kind of thing. I'm like,
I guess that makes it a spy novel rather than a
That's what it says. It's basically that's a spy novel, not a detective novel. And
The
last one is just a list of tropes he doesn't like. Which are finding the culprit by comparing the butt of a cigarette at the crime with the brand smoked by a suspect, which they did in episode 3, I'm pretty sure.
Wasn't so much a brand, it was just the presence of a cigarette.
But like, it still feels close enough that I'm like, haha. Pretending to do a seance to frighten the culprit into confessing. Forging fingerprints. Having an alibi made by like making a dummy of yourself. Having a dog that doesn't bark and thereby revealing the fact that the intruder is familiar. Pinning the crime on a twin or relative who looks exactly the same. a hypodermic syringe that has knockout drops in it. Having the murder happen in a locked room after the police have actually broken in the door, which may well have happened at some point in Umin Echo. Using the word association test to make people seem guilty, and having a cipher or a code letter.
Some of these, you're right, some of these Umin Echo does. Some of them I do think it manages to avoid. The hypodermic needle being one of them, I think.
It's interesting. I prefer Nox's commandments because they're broader. These ones just seem a little bit nitpicky and a bit personal.
There's a reason why
they use Nox.
She included all of Nox's commandments and only included, I believe by the end of the VN, according to the wiki, because she mentioned six of Van Dyne's commandments.
Are we allowed?
I can't say which
ones. Okay, we're not allowed to know which ones yet. I think we get two of them in this reading. One is the servant one.
Yeah. Actually, I think some of them might be manga exclusive. I'm not sure. But Rikishi signed off on the manga as canon, so whatever.
Yeah, I think one interesting thing about these is because I was wondering, why would Van Dyne's be in here when Nox covers basically all of the same stuff?
Oh, by the way, the rule we talked about where it's like rule 16 about long descriptive passages is actually mentioned in the manga.
That's so funny!
I can't say the context yet, but know that Rikishi indirectly has brought up that rule.
Okay, we are gonna...
As a way of justifying his own writing.
Before we finish doing Umin Echo in this, on the pod, we need to know about the context of that. You need to find us that.
Yeah, I think you're gonna really hate it, but
okay.
when it comes up, like you perhaps lay it out.
Because it's a manga exclusive one, I'll have to I'll let you know when it would have shown up if we were reading the manga.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think
that's what I'll do.
Yeah, I prefer Nox's. They're more succinct. They also, interestingly, Van Dyne's cover a lot of things that I'm like, actually, I think you could do a fairly good detective novel, but you'd have to be careful here.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, Nox, the one big one that I noticed here that Nox has that Van Dyne's doesn't, is the one where it says that non-detective characters should be allowed to interpret things in their own way, which I think is really important for Umin Echo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, is used quite heavily in that bit of episode 5 that I have talked about not liking.
You're right, though. It's interesting. It doesn't exclude the possibility of that happening, but it doesn't, like, make provision for it occurring.
And I'm curious as well, like, is there going to be a Delana Will fight at some point? In which they both just battle over which of their rule sets is the best.
That does sound like that would slap. I would fucking love that, actually.
Who knows?
Can we get that, please? Umin Echo, my one wish, be long enough for that to occur.
I also feel like...
There might be some more anime battles.
Yes. I also feel like this is an important time to bring up. I remembered when reading this rules about one the worst mystery novel I've ever read. Spoilers for Vanity Dies Hard by Ruth Rendell, if you've not read that.
I already hate the title. Go on.
Was written in the 1960s, and it's a story about this woman who has married quite a wealthy guy who's a bit young. He's about 10 years younger than she is, I think. And so she's a bit insecure in the relationship. She keeps worrying that he might be cheating on her. And then one of her friends goes missing suspiciously, and her husband keeps being like, don't worry about it, she'll be fine, don't investigate. And so she's like, ooh, is something going on? And then she starts getting, like, nauseous all the time. And she's like, someone's poisoning me because I'm too close to the truth. And the doctor keeps coming round and, like, looking for stuff, and she gets really paranoid. And it turns out she was pregnant. And nothing was going on.
Oh.
That's the end. She was just, and the doctor in, like, every scene the doctor's there, he just keeps saying things like, no, don't worry, it's just, and then he gets interrupted by something and has to leave. So, like, the doctor knew she was pregnant the whole time, he just didn't get the opportunity to tell her. And it's super fucking obvious.
Either he's a terrible doctor,
And just the entire story is woman is paranoid and doesn't know how to tell she was pregnant, and isn't that funny? And isn't that a fun mystery? The end. It's so bad. And it just reminded me of this, because I was like, not only did this mystery not have a corpse, it didn't have a mystery.
That's mind-bogglingly awful.
I know. And it's annoying, because I've heard, it's the only Ruth Rendell book I've ever read, I think. And I think it was a bad one to choose, because I think she is a fairly good writer, in at least in, she's known to be a fairly good writer in like Golden Age detective fiction. And I read this and I was like, this was so bad.
Yeah. Jeez. I don't even know how to formulate a take on that. What the fuck?
I know. Very disappointing. Extremely bad. Don't read that book. Unless you want to, like, it's quite short, I guess. unless you want to have takes on it. But yeah, it was wildly disappointing. So there you go.
I have learned something new today.
This is why you should at least somewhat stick to some rules about detective fiction, I feel like. Maybe have a mystery that goes somewhere.
Yeah, that would help, I think. Definitely. Shall we get back to Women Echo?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a lovely little detour. What the fuck
that
happens
was a
next?
Really fun tangent.
Yeah, it's just I went through those rules and I was like, I've just remembered that book made me so angry.
Yeah,
I had to share it.
So, thank you, because now I know not to read it. That sucks. Although wait till someone writes a VN on it, and I'm like, actually, this is genius. We should all read this. It could happen. It's happened before. Let's move on to chapter one, The Murder of Beatrice. So Will's outside a very familiar looking chapel. It's not reused art. Oh, wait, no, before we do this, new opening. What do you guys think of the new opening sequence?
I wrote down, sadly, my least favourite opening song so far.
Oh no, I guess it's probably mine as well.
It's fine.
I don't know, actually.
It's fine, but I
probably
wasn't...
like it more than the second one. I don't know, I think it's cute.
The second one's my favourite so far, I think. Maybe, I'm not sure, I haven't listened to the first one in a while. Yeah, the third one, it didn't slap as hard for me. It was a bit softer. We did also slightly skim over the fact that, yeah, in this bit with the whole maid situation, Will basically is like, it wasn't the maid. It was this guy who also had a shitty alibi. Also, inquisitors aren't intellectual rapists. He basically says, like, innocent people shouldn't have all of their dirt dug up for the sake of finding the culprit.
I think my new take on intellectual rapists is Ryukishi came up with it and was like, that's so fucking smart, and was just like, I'm gonna have every bad character say it.
I also think, like, I kind of thought in this, I was like, right, okay, so he's the opposite to Erica. He's set up as her, like...
Yes.
Her narrative opposite in saying that. It was kind of obvious anyway, yeah. But like, it's really hammered home that he is.
It's like he's a detective who's not just trying to, you know, one up people.
Yeah,
stuff.
He cares about people's feelings that he's interrogating. Unlike a certain someone.
Unlike a certain someone.
Unlike Courtney's favorite character of all time. Well, she's not, but she's the most well written fictional character of all time. There we go. Back to
the fucking
the main VN.
Chapel.
We're outside the chapel. It's very familiar. It's the Umineko Rokunjima Island Chapel. Will is there
for some reason.
He's being welcomed in by Canon.
Yes. He's manning the reception desk and gives him a golden rose for the coffin, because every mourner is allowed a golden rose, even though Canon has no idea who the fuck he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, who the fuck are you? And, well, he doesn't say that, but, like, Will's like, I have this letter, and hands it over, and Canon's like, in you go then, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kinzo's in there, just fucking wailing.
Yeah, he's doing a good full, like,
Beatrice!
And Rudolph makes fun of him for doing that. Like,
yeah, Natsui and Genji around him being like, it's okay, it's okay. And Krauss is like, lol, Beatrice!
Lol, Beatrice!
So, inside the coffin, there isn't a corpse. There's a book with extravagant binding, which is the diary book.
It also, yes, it says October 5th, 1986 on it.
It sure does.
To my beloved Beatrice, October 5th, 1986.
Which doesn't really clear up which of the things it is that I thought it might be, if any of them, because I feel like that fits, like, maybe all of them.
And then Krauss comes up and introduces his child, Leon.
Yeah.
So out the bat, the version of this novel that I'm reading just avoids using pronouns for Leon.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
Fully. Like.
Yes.
Never says, like, son or daughter. Never use it, like, no one. I don't know how this transfers into the original Japanese, because I don't know how gendering works in Japanese, and I don't know how the VN goes about it, so, like, big asterisk on that. But I looked because I was like, interesting, what's going on here. My immediate instinct, of course, was this is the canon to Jess's Shannon, right? Like, this is Jess too, but that's crack theory instinct. Because Leon, they even look a little bit like canon. They have we see them on screen at one point, they have exactly the same face shape.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
A very similar outfit.
They've got the kind of Jessica hair. They've got, like, it's kind of blonde, but it's longer and, like, tied back. They've got a really nice fancy pink cravat going on.
Yeah.
Well dressed.
So I will say, your observation is accurate to the Japanese version. Ooh. There is no gendered anything around Leon.
Interesting.
In this reading.
What pronouns should we use then?
Well, I guess
I would recommend sticking to they, them.
Okay.
For now.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible to not use pronouns for someone, but that sometimes takes a little bit of thought and training. So
yeah, I didn't notice, and naturally, because it's the Ishira Mias, I presumed we were going to be using he, him. So I am nicely surprised by this. Again, me not noticing things this reading.
But despite the fact that Krauss has a new child, Jessica does seem to still exist.
Yeah. So this is interesting.
Jess, but she's not there. Question mark.
She hasn't been. She isn't shown in this reading anyway.
She isn't shown, but Leon does say that Jessica
is about
their younger sister.
Yeah,
we haven't seen any of the cousins in this reading.
We don't see the cousins in this reading.
We see George and Maria on screen very briefly.
Oh, yeah, very brief appearance.
But none of the others.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
We see Battle right in the prologue, but that's it.
Yeah, I don't know whether Battle is actually here in this game board bit or not. Which is interesting, because obviously the protag is now Will.
Yeah, we're definitely following him around.
I also like the character menu for Leon says that they wear the silver ring of the head's successor and will take up the position when they're 20 because they're well suited to it and Kinzo adores them.
Yeah.
Which, what did you do to get adored by Kinzo for a start? That makes me a bit sus, actually. But, like,
yeah,
but it's interesting.
Strike against Leon.
Yeah.
They basically say as much to Will that Krauss is Should Kinzo die before Leon turns 20, then Kraus will be the acting head until Leon enters adulthood and can fully succeed the headship, as 20 is the age of majority when this was written.
Will's just a bit like, interesting, okay. And then Burncastle's there.
Yeah, then Burncastle shows up and basically is like, she called Will. She sent him like a summary of the past game boards, and is basically in a position where he can't really refuse her demands to do some deduction.
Yeah, she's like, come on, come solve this. She also says like, we're not in Beatrice's cat box anymore. We're in a bigger one now.
Yeah.
Whatever it's the like hell that means.
Yeah, she says she's kind of expanded it, and that's why Leon's there, is the implication.
Yeah, I kind of assumed that this was going to be some kind of alternative fragment kind of situation, which will somehow end up giving us more information about the fragments that we have seen in the past, but isn't like canon with the game boards that we've already seen.
And Burncastle says that the tale's title is Requiem of the Golden Witch, which it is, and for him to spin a tale fitting for Beato's funeral.
Yeah.
She seems to want him to drag out the guts, but who knows what that entails.
But yeah, all of this time, by the way, she's just standing on top of the altar, and Leon's in the background going, hey, can you get down? And they both just ignore it. They'll ignore them.
Yeah, she's very asshole cat mode, which is very fitting for her.
Yeah.
She might as well just be going around like knocking down vases and not noticing.
Yeah.
At this point,
I love the image of Burncastle claws out angrily batting something in order to kill it. The way a terrified cat does, just like bonk, 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 bonk.
That would be so good.
I also like in this, by the way, that like Will is like, what if I just leave? And Burncastle's like, you could try.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
And Will's like, oh, I see. Right.
Yeah. And Will immediately goes to test that theory, essentially.
Yeah. So I'm presuming as well that this means that Will's going to be the detective for this game board, no matter how weird this game board
basically
is.
Basically, yeah.
However, Burncastle specifically says that she's not going to give him detective authority.
Or an opponent, yeah.
Or an opponent. She's like, I want you to figure this out, but I'm not going to give you that power, which is interesting because it does mean that he doesn't have objective vision.
Yeah, and it also could mean he's the culprit.
It could also mean he's the culprit. I would be surprised, but you never know.
Ooh, he also gives us a couple more Van Dyne roles in red during this.
Yes.
So he gives number 7, it's forbidden to have a crime without a corpse. Which is why, like, he says that because Beatrice's corpse isn't in the casket, and Burncastle's like, that doesn't mean there isn't one. It just isn't here. And he also, it gives us number 1, it's forbidden to have a crime without all clues presented. And Burncastle's just like, don't worry, they're all here. Like, you can get what you need from this place. Which is good to know, so we'll write those down on the list of okayed Van Dyne rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a separate list, goodness.
So, when they leave, Leon and Will run into Canon. Leon doesn't seem to know the name of Canon, but is just like, well, we have a lot of servants coming in and out, you know, I can't really remember all of them.
Yeah, I did read this as being, like, fucking up, forgetting Canon's name, like, trying to, like, Leon's, like, stumbles, and then Will sort of catches it, and then Leon's, like, actually thinks up this excuse about servants coming in and out really quickly. Like, that's how I read this interaction, rather than Leon just genuinely thinks this about the servants coming in and out.
I wasn't sure how to take this, because I was like, simultaneously, I want to really like Leon, look at that little character design, very good, but also I was like, they're beloved by Kinzo. So I don't necessarily believe that they wouldn't treat servants like trash. However, Kinzo has named a lot of the servants very similar names.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Leon could be forgiven.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's it'd be like, is this one Canon or Lunon or Shannon or
yeah, there's quite a few of them.
He's not made it easy for anybody to remember who's who.
Just trying to call someone over, but like non. Non.
Seven people arrive.
Non.
They go outside and Will throws a golden rose past the entrance of the church, and it like freezes in time and like crumbles to dust.
Mm.
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, we're probably not going to be going anywhere anytime
soon.
Yeah,
Leon's like, what the fuck is that? And Will's like, oh, you know, time bubble, we're trapped here, we need to play this game, whatever.
Yeah.
And Leon's like, oh.
Yeah.
Leon just sort of accepts it, but the justification that's kind of given is, not going to test it with my body.
Well, they kind of move towards it, and Will's like, you just saw what happened to that rose. Do you want to try that with your own arm? And they're like, yeah, you're right. Maybe not.
I'm good, actually. I'm good.
It's very sensible, I think. And Will's like, oh, yeah, we need to get this sorted because I've got a date with Diana, and she'll, like, tire the furniture up again if I'm back late. And I was like,
yeah.
Who is this? Is this, like, a cat? Or an extreme...
Immediately, like, oh, I see Will is dating a witch. I was just like, this is Beato behaviour.
Mm.
So then they go into what this described as like a really shitty like buffet where all the family are hanging
out.
Yeah,
and it's
Leon basically turns and says, "You don't want to be late for your cat." And Will's like, "Oh, you were. That was a cat." So
yeah, and Leon's like, "Well, most people don't tear up furniture." And that was like, I do actually really love the concept of like just a feral little guy who tears up the furniture, who lives with Will, and every time he comes back and he's like, oh, not again. It's like, I got bored.
Diana, I'm meant to have your half of the rent this week. Instead, you've ruined my couch.
I'm screaming. I'm like, gay. Will is gay. This is what we're being told.
So... Leon kind of has to mediate for Will between the family because Will's incredibly like blunt and abrasive.
Yeah, he just turns up to every bit of the family and goes, right, so who killed this person then? This person's dead. What do you want to tell us about it? Who are you?
Leon does this by pinching Will's ass for what it's worth.
And so which my response to this was, wow, neither of you came out of this looking good.
No.
Maybe Leon gets that from Kinzo. Seems like Kinzo.
Maybe that's why Kinzo likes them.
Mm. Yeah.
Basically, this leads to Will interrogating Rosa because Rosa's having a full breakdown over the stuff that we knew from episode 3 about the Kuadorian Beatrice and Rosa's involvement in her demise.
It's like pretty much like, oh, we've heard this all already, this is absolutely unhelpful to me.
Yeah, and they're all like, what do you mean, we've like Rosa just told us about this. Will's like, I know all of this.
Shut the fuck theorizing up, Rosa.
That it might be the child of the original Beatrice to make the ages kind of line up better. They say that it wouldn't make any sense.
We've talked about this, it makes sense, and unfortunately Will seems kind of unsatisfied by this answer, which means it's almost definitely not true.
Oh, I guess, like, the other thing we learn is that Rosa did tell Genji. I can't remember if we already had that.
Mm, yeah, no, we didn't. Yeah, she told Genji. Another thing that I find extremely important about her retelling of this was that after she saw Beatrice was dead, she ran back to through the woods as fast as she could, and she came out by the back of the chapel, and she says, like, oh yeah, I found the lion statue, you know, the one at the back of the chapel. And I was like, this has to be an epitaph thing. We've talked about these lion statues before. We've talked about the chapel being important. There's the engraving on the top of it. Now we know there's lion statues at the back as well as the front. That has to be something.
So... I'm gonna I'm going to confess, I knew that Will and Leon were on their way because I had seen ship art of them, copious amounts of ship art of them on Twitter. As
they're
you
a very popular
fucking
ship.
Imagine.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about the lion statues, I had been like, I bet that's the answer because I know that there's a character called Lion coming up. Because I'd never heard it out loud and I didn't know it was pronounced Leon.
Leon.
So I was fully convinced that you'd got the right answer with the lion statues, but didn't know how to tell you. And now I realise I'm just an idiot.
I don't know. I still think there's something there with these lion statues.
I think you're probably right. I just don't think that...
I don't know Leon whether it has anything to do with Leon or not.
No.
But no. I was just like, that seems like a really... throwaway detail to have put in, and I feel like it has to be important.
I will say, if there's like a ship that could probably rival Beata Battler in fandom popularity, I'd say Will Leon has a pretty good shot. It's very popular in both the Western and
how
Japanese
old
fandoms.
Are they?
Great question. I believe Leon is 19.
Will seems older than
that. They were both like early 20s. Well, I guess.
Oh, interesting.
Lion can't be.
Leon gave me like. Leon's obviously not older than 20 because they would inherit the succession at 20. But.
I believe Will is the same category of immortal being as most of the other.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
And fucking dual genderman. Who is also not given an age. I want it noted.
Yeah, he's supposed to be human, though.
Unaged,
unlike Will's probably like 3,000 years old. Interestingly enough, though, he gave me the energy of, instead of early 20s, he gave me like 30s energy.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's right, but who knows?
I think it'll be interesting seeing the way he interacts with the cousins, because I think the art itself could go either way, but I think once he talks to George, whether or not he talks to George as an equal or down, will really like age him.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Well, I mean, I think everyone should talk down to George, but that's just I agree.
Unfortunately, he might like that.
Perhaps.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Will kind of leaves the side room and goes back to the main chapel and talks to Burncastle.
Again.
He's basically like, I need a bit of help here. I'm not really getting anywhere. I just got a bunch of information we already knew. And Burncastle's like, right, well, I'll give you some power to help you. And Will's like, oh, you're going to give me detective's authority? She's like,
No.
I'm giving you something new. Theatre-going authority.
And she does not explain what the fuck that is. But my guess would be, does that mean he can watch flashbacks of people? Like, because that seems... It has to be something to do with watching stuff.
I guess that would make sense for, like...
So, like, watching bits that he hasn't actually seen?
Like, Featherine's a witch of theatre going, and she's just been there
watching the whole
stuff,
thing,
so,
yeah.
You know.
So maybe he can ask someone about something that happened and then see it from their perspective, or... see it from an omniscient perspective or something like that. That might be interesting.
That would probably be helpful.
I don't know what we would do with the fact that obviously neither the person he was watching the flashback of or him have detective's authority. So like biases and subjective stuff would be very hard to pin down who was seeing what everyone was seeing exactly. But it would certainly be useful clues.
So what Will decides to do instead is walk over to Shannon and shoot me in the head. Because he essentially walks up to Shannon and is like, hey, could you just confirm if, like, that bit that Rowan did is actually, like, genuinely the thing? And Shannon's like, yeah, I can do that for you. And then fucking does. And the game's like, sometimes if you're a high, like sometimes people can accidentally put their king into check early on in the game of chess. And not notice. A gratuitous novice would then seize the opportunity and take the king. But if you're a high level player, you should have enough love for the game that you point it out and let your opponent change. And then Will's like, actually, I'm good. You don't need to do that. We're fine. Because essentially what he does is asks Shannon to summon Cannon, ergo make them both in the same place at the same
time.
Yeah,
he's like, just go get him. Go get him. I want to talk to both of you at the same time. And like, she just like, she's like, go get Cannon. I can't. And gives loads of excuses. And then he's like, just go get him. And like, her eyes like blank over. She goes kind of robotic and like, all of her words start stretching out. And she's like, are you sure? Yeah. And it's like the game going, really this will funny. Break everything if you do this.
It's fully like chopsticks.
And then, yeah, and then Will's like, no, I'm good, actually. That basically confirms everything.
Yeah, so the whole reason this happens is because Will notices that Shannon doesn't seem to know who Leon is.
Oh, he's yeah, like, okay, yeah, that's why.
Neither does Cannon. So we should all come together and discuss this Leon situation because it's a bit weird. And that's how this all ends up happening.
Yeah, because...
And that's how Will discovers he's accidentally kind of started cornering the king, you know?
Yeah, I guess...
And so he doesn't push it any further.
In previous game boards, like in the question arc, we've noticed before that Cannon and Shannon have knowledge of previous game boards, which... I think at first we thought, like, oh, that's because they're furniture. Now, looking back, I'm like, okay, that's because they're running it. Because they're Beatrice. And so I guess they are in this game board. They're not running things because Verncastle is. And Leon supposedly isn't Beatrice's piece. So they're like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah,
is what I would assume.
There's a point where Will's like, who's told you that, to one of the instructions, excuses that Shannon gives, and her response is the one who commands us, which is interesting. I think maybe this is an example of like where Burncastle was like, oh, some of the heart will be lost. Like, this is one of the like glitches. It's like, it's really clear. It's clear from its absence, almost, where things are. Like because we now have something to contrast the previous games to, you can kind of see where something is missing from before.
Are you saying that, like, in a Beatrice game board, if Will had kept along that line of questioning, instead of Shannon going weird and blank and robotic and kind of showing the mechanics of it all, that like there would have just been a she'd have left, or there'd have been some kind of excuse that covered up the fact that her and Cannon weren't in the same room, but Burncastle's just like, you can, you know, we'll just show the mechanics, why not? Like, it's just a game.
Yeah, to some degree, I think that's kind of what I'm going for. It's kind of revealing the spirit of Beato's game by the fact that it's not here. It's like, oh, I understand what made Beato's game Beato's now, because I can see something else.
I'm also wondering whether the fact that this is... Because it is confirmed in this that we are in 1986, but Kinzo's still alive. There's an extra sibling going on with Leon. They're all in the chapel. They all seem aware. All of the siblings seem aware of Beatrice and all at least suspect that she was Kinzo's mistress. So there's some timeline mixing up, and whether that's another Burncastle thing, whereas she's like, I'm actually more interested in setting a stage where you can find out the answers, because that's what Featherine's asked her to do, than I am in creating a fun narrative based on the events of October 5th, 1986, which is all the other game board stuff. I don't know whether that's... Because it's all a bit manufactured, isn't it?
One of my points is I will say is I've argued all this time that the long-term goal of Umineko is to make Battler the Yushiromiya family head.
Mm.
And the fact that he's kind of won now and he's kind of inherited that already means that that goal no longer exists. Bun Castle is making this game, but it's not orientated towards that goal, and as a consequence, some of the things that would be in here that are orientated towards like pushing Battler towards that goal just don't need to be in here anymore.
Yeah, and like, obviously including the absence of Battler either. Yeah. Like, he might be here, but he's not in this reading. He's not shown. So he's kind of not important to this, seemingly, at least yet.
Yeah.
Whereas the reading ends with Leon coming back and being like, Will, I've got you. Kinzo will now speak to you. And that's the important thing, is that Kinzo's alive in this one, so we can actually be interrogated now.
Yeah, the goal of this game is to solve the mystery, not anything else.
And I guess from extrapolating based off that, you can say that Kinzo's backstory is important in explaining how all of this has gone down.
Because it's very important in understanding Beato, like how Beatrice came about.
And who Beatrice is in the real world before Shannon and Canon got to her. Her image, anyway.
Exactly.
Well, I'm curious actually what you said about the headship thing, because it's obvious that the headship of the Ushirimiya is like a big thing. Every time we talk about the ring, Courtney's like, isn't it interesting that the ring is involved here? And I'm like, yes, yes it is. I don't know what, for instance, Shannon and Canon would get out of Battler being the specific person who was the Ushirimiya family head.
I had just sort of assumed that it was like sort of in tone for the Ushirimiya. Oh, that was a bad attempt to say that word. Not going to try that again for a bit, I think. We're all good. At least people can hear me fumble up the names Leon and Will as well now.
Love that.
What was I going to say? I just sort of assumed that it was sort of like a Battler was best suited for the role, but he needed to like have the prowess of magic and inherit some of the like more insane qualities that really made Kinzo Kinzo.
It implies like the way that like all of the murder game stuff is set up implies that it's important enough that Battler is the head of the family that Shannon Cannon would murder everybody else in order to make that happen. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know why it's that.
I'd assumed that the murder game was sort of like secondary because we've got all of these game boards, and I was like, the thing about this is it's a magical story that's happening over and over again, and so whether or not these people are actually alive at the end of it could be completely different. But what will happen is Battler will have changed, and he will be a suitable head. Like, if Battler is experiencing this, his personality will be changed irrefutably. Actually, the witches can resurrect and kill people as often as they want. The key here is Battler's personality will have changed, and he will then believe the witch explanation. And once that's happened, the witches can revive everyone. We can all go to the Golden Land, and Battler can be the head of that family.
I think as well, I hadn't really considered this before, but like, it also depends partially on what happens when the game ends. Because what if the game ends and nobody's died? And basically Battler is put back at, say, the beginning of the family conference on October 4th. And he's seen all of this stuff, and he's experienced these games, and now he's like, oh, I can solve the epitaph maybe and become the family head and do the right thing and save everyone or something. Like, I don't know. I don't know whether it's guaranteed that if the game ends, Battler is then put back into a real world where one of those game boards has actually come true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what
we don't know where he was kidnapped from time, I guess, and when he'd be replaced, and Because there's no real point in making him family head if he's put back into a real world where him and his entire family are dead, for instance.
Agreed. Agreed. It's a theory that I wane in and out of. When I think about When the Seagulls Cry, no one's left alive.
Because Beatrice, like, that's not like an accident bullshit. That happened, because Beatrice made that happen at the end of every game board.
Exactly. I'm like, so either this is Beato setting it back to the beginning of the game boards for us to, and for like this is a grand reset button, or this is just like the explosion theory, which, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, is this to teach Battler that there's a big bomb under the island that he has to go and get rid of when he goes back to the real world? Like, yeah. I don't know. Nobody's talked about what happens to Battler at the end of the game. They've talked a bit about like what would happen to Battler if he lost. Or what would happen to Beatrice if she lost, which obviously kind of happened, but not if Battler wins. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we'll find out this episode.
No, I don't think,
we're going to get very minimal Battler Beato plot. I think this episode is going to be like Ryukishi sort of bats us around the head with stuff and lays out some of the solutions.
Lays out some. Oh, I hope there's some epitaph stuff.
I do
in this episode. Stuff, call me. Is there epitaph stuff? I need more.
There might be some epitaph stuff.
I need some more leads before I can do more silly things with the epitaph. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to like go a bit wild with it and meme about it and then get the answer by accident.
So we're kind of at the end of this reading. It ends off with them saying they're going to go talk to Kinzo, and we'll see how that goes now that Will has theatre-going authority.
Yeah.
One thing I want to point out before we wrap up is Will brings up Erica to Burncastle because he's like, oh, am I one of your pieces like Erica? And Burncastle just sort of like laughs nervously and is like, Erica? Which... is very funny to me and also makes me wonder whether or not Erica's actually going to be.
I read that as Erica, she's fucking dead. Like,
that's
the vibe I got. I got the vibes that she's like, she was so pissed off at how Erica performed in the last game that she's like, don't talk to me about that bit.
I mean, there's like, she did tell Erica what would happen to her if she failed multiple times.
Yeah.
So.
And Erica did fail. And Erica was fully like, I'm so pleased Burncastle isn't here to watch me fail, even though she didn't watch my triumphant moment, because, like, I know she would just come and yell at me.
I mean, like, I am also willing to believe that, again, Burncastle's doing a massive fake-out thing in which Erica's still around. That was all a huge bit in order to make it so that Erica pops up later on to be a massive thorn in Battler's side that he's not expecting, because he thought she was dead. But, dunno.
Yeah, there is a part of me that's like, Battler created that game board. How much does he control Erica? How much is this entire narrative created? However, it is very funny that Burncastle's like, Erica?
She's so irrelevant now.
Erica is so last 30 hours ago.
Erica So, kidding? Episode 5 and 6. She's not coming back.
Insane. Oh, dear. Ooh. Well.
So, yeah, we wrap up there. Do we have any final thoughts on this reading?
As much as I enjoyed going through Van Dyne's rules, I'm quite glad not all 20 of them are going to be in here, because that's so many.
It's a lot to think about.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, we... kind of dodged a bullet there, Ryukishi was like, yeah, some of these rules I'm not huge on, so,
And we only have two of them that I used in the context of this game board. So, yeah, the jury is out for me on whether I think the servant one is applicable. I'm thinking maybe not.
We will be reading from chapter 3, Kinzo Ashiramiya, to the end of chapter 5, The Witch Who Came from the Sea. Hi, just a little note from editing Courtney. Next week's reading has some stuff I need to content warn. Just be a bit careful for some allusions to sexual assault around the part where they start talking about Kinzo's backstory.
Like, she came from the sea like a sweet fish, you might say.
She did what?
She came back from the sea to fuck like a sweet fish.
She did.
No. We're back on this. I'm right like about
it,
the Jess. Fucking.
No, I don't like it. So as per usual, our socials are in the description, including the fabulous Tumblr. Please check it out. It's really something else. Especially with, like, you know, Twitter, like, basically setting itself on fire these days. I would recommend it. We picked a really good time to migrate to Tumblr, I think.
Yeah, totally, voluntarily.
Totally voluntarily. Totally. Nothing else happened to provoke this move. So yeah, we'll be back next time with more episode 7 shenanigans. Thank you and good night.
She came from the sea into like sweet fish on my river.
Go away.
Now I'll play the ending song.
Okay, yeah.